Thank you. I just want to get this straight. When you get drinks, you have to go to the vendor. So you've actually managed to combine two vices, graft and alcohol. I love that. Good morning. Thank you for coming. We're going to leave time for questions at the end. There's nothing like having a conversation by having someone talk at you. So I hope that we'll have plenty of time to talk back at me and tell me what I got wrong. Also, these slides will be available on my website, and I'm guessing linked or available from the Amigos website. We're going to even try and record this. It'll be very exciting. Thank you for having me. We've been having a lot of fun with this concept of conversations, which we're going to go into. And actually, I'm hoping to do something a little bit different than the standard "this was what our paper thing is." I'd actually like to start showing you some examples that we're working on and with some partners on how these kinds of ideas become implemented, and try and talk a little bit about how these concepts not only work online, which is where the technology brief really went, but increasingly offline. So I'm hoping that we can really spend some time thinking about how we can do things differently. Not differently just to be different, but different because we have a lot of cool opportunities in a changing environment. And it's always good for a profession, an organization, to stop and reflect upon itself. Now, some would say libraries are probably a little better at most, or at least more prolific at reflecting upon our own practice, but I actually take that as a good thing. So the one thing I did want to start, it's always bad to start with criticisms of the people who invited you, but I'm looking at this pamphlet that was sent out with conversations, and I'm having a little trouble with it being representative of what I see the profession as. So if you don't mind, I took the liberty. Much better. At least now it's more representative of me. And isn't that what it's all about? Now, in presentations, the last thing you want to do, and the first thing in the morning, you want to get people excited, you want to get them laughing, so we start with that. And then what we do is we put them to sleep by giving them a huge amount of text to read. So there you go. It gets worse. I'll read it for you. That these are challenging, often difficult times for academic libraries is no news to anyone in the library world. Concern for professionalism, with its attention to accountability and responsibility, although unprecedented growth in technology, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, while critics charge that the academic libraries are not sufficiently integrated into the cultural concerns of the college or university, and the librarians have their own independent agendas, librarians responsible for present services as well as plans for the future are uneasy. Okay. Now, you could put public library in there, you could put school library in there, but all right, more lots of blocks of text. Perhaps it is an overstatement to say that academic libraries are drifting in a vast sea of information and technological advances, searching for an appropriate course of action. Nevertheless, we appear to have lost the stabilizing rudder of confidence in who we are and what we are to do. Almost done. So now, not only am I putting you to sleep, but I'm reading critical things about your profession. Isn't this brilliant? As a more powerful alternative to the images of librarianship already available or proposed, I suggest that we begin to think of libraries as centers of conversation and of ourselves as mediators of and participants in the conversations of the world. Now, this is not a quote from my paper. In fact, this is a quote from a paper written by Joan Bechtel in 1986. Everything old is new again. One of my favorite articles of all time is actually Taylor's Question Negotiation from 1968, where there's this nice little nugget that says, once we get over these little hiccups of library automation, we can move on to the really important stuff, right? We're constantly addressing these issues. And I think that some of these statements have resonance with us now. talking about what is our role. I think that some of the technological advances and the 2.0s and all this other, I mean, the joke that we always have is, you know, with Library 2.0, after a couple thousand years at this, can't we at least be on version 12.5 beta, right? But it is a good and interesting time, and I think a time very ripe for opportunities for this field and this profession. I'm not a doomsayer. I think we are far from losing relevancy. I think we have great opportunities to increase our relevancy. And I'm going to try and give some examples of that. But before that, I want to step back. Library 2.0, Web 2.0, all of these things, all these terms in the technological world, in the information world, were being thrust upon us. But not just us. We're trying to figure out what this means, but we're not the only ones. And so what was happening is, if you're familiar, last year, proposed in Congress was a piece of legislation called DOPA, and never a more appropriate name for a law has ever been developed. DOPA was the Defense of Online Predators Act. Of course, in the last Congress, it could have been defense against congressmen. But the idea was, as we know, for every actual user on MySpace, there are at least four or five pedophiles waiting for them to log on. And this is horrible. Now, it's not good to make light of pedophilia in general, I understand. But the idea was, it had a good aim. We want to prevent our children from becoming victims. I like that aim. That's a good thing. In fact, if you look at a lot of the missions of public libraries, it's well within our mission. We provide havens for those environments. I wasn't so thrilled, though, with how they wanted to do it, which was they said, well, you know, we got SEPA, so they already have to filter, but let's tell them what to filter. Now what we're going to do is not simply say, if you get E-rate funding, you need to filter your access. Here are the sites you need to filter. And they couldn't exactly come out and list by name the sites they wanted, so they tried to come up with a general definition. So they tried social networking, that didn't really work. And they tried a lot of things. And what they ended up with was things like interactive website. Right? And one could read it very much as anything with a form that you can fill out, like Disney.com, right? And so the idea was, don't worry that we don't have this definition right. What we're going to do is, once we pass the law, we'll set up a federal committee that will actually then list the things you have to cite. All right. This scared a lot of us. But it also represented an interesting trend. What it looks, I mean, we can go into the policy and we can argue about it, but what it was a reaction by an organization given the responsibility, the welfare of its community, trying to adjust to this technology. And I would say that there is many a library director that's in the same spot, that should we let filter this kind of access anyway? Should we set up a social networking site? Should we do these kinds of things? And then faced with the jargon and the changing terminology. And so what happened was, the Office for Information Technology Policy of ALA asked us to look into this. And we started with just about where everyone starts in this. We started with the list. Mashup, Library 2.0, Wikipedia, Flickr, social network, and we ended up with the dictionary. And it was a very unsatisfying effort because, frankly, there are really good ones out there already. I mean, if you want a definition of these things, go get them. But what kept confusing us is we kept trying to say, what's going on here? What's the deeper thing going on here, and is it important or is it durable? I mean, that's the real question that we want to know with technology. Is it fundamental, durable, or is it a flash in the pan? We have plenty of examples. Michael Gorman took lots of opportunities to tell us lots of examples of technological dead ends. Which ones are durable? I think the web, kind of durable, right? So the idea was to look underneath it. And we started with things like, well, it's very interesting. If you look at the behavior of people on MySpace, it's a really interesting sort of collection development problem. People are collecting friends. And, you know, what's interesting is when you look at them, the definition of friends is really someone I collect, not someone I actually interact with. And so, oh, wow, it's a collection development thing, and we're collecting these things. Oh, it's not quite true. It doesn't work here. And what we came upon was, what's going on here is a conversation. What's happening is that when people are going online, they are looking very much to learn, to absorb information, to capture. They're looking to learn. Right? It's a learning process. Not everyone. Some people are looking for entertainment. Some people are looking to kill some time. But when you look at the field and profession we're in, we're really in a knowledge learning field. And so what we're looking at is, when people are going online, they're looking to learn. And we've dug up some really interesting research. A fellow by the name of Gordon Pask British cyberneticist from the 60s and 70s, came up with something called conversation theory. And conversation theory, at its heart, says knowledge is developed through conversation. It's a sort of a simple, you know, idea. When we learn through conversation. Now, that conversation can be like this, one-to-one, can be one-to-many, can be many-to-many, can be organization-to-organization. When you're voting today in Amigos, you're actually having a conversation. It's a very specialized, very strategic type of conversation that has rules around it. When I write a paper in an academic journal, I'm having a conversation. That's why I include citations. Right? We've known this for a long time. Bibliometrics from the 80s and is getting a resurgence in webliometrics and the idea of looking at citation patterns as a conversation. The invisible college, what have you. We know reference is about conversations. Right? We know this stuff. It's intuitive to us. But what's very interesting is when you look and you sort of break that idea down, it says, all right, if knowledge is gathered through conversation, by the way, conversation can happen within the individual. Right? We argue with ourselves all the time, and very few of us get dragged away for it. Right? But the, you know, in learning theory, this is called metacognition. We had someone apply who did a dissertation on metacognition, so it was literally a thinking about how people think about thinking. The idea that we have these conversations, that we're learning it, but what the implication of that is that if we are in the knowledge business, and I think there are very few libraries who would stand up and go, we don't care about knowledge. We're in the archive business. We're in the information business. Our job is just to lay it out there and hope someone cares. Right? I think many of us would argue no. We don't want to be in the everything to all people. We want to be in the knowledge business. And that means we're in the learning business, and that means we're in the conversation business. Libraries are in the conversation business. Now, here's the real interesting twist here. Books, videos, websites, DVDs, VHS, microfiche, any sort of recorded thing is an artifact of knowledge. It is not the knowledge itself, right? What we care about is the learning and the knowledge. I mean, why is it that when you have speaker series, people go to the speaker series? They can just read the book, or they could watch a recording of it. No, they want to be part of that situation. They want to be in that conversation. So books and videos, these are simply artifacts. They're very pale echoes of a very powerful process. Right? What we are trying to do is inform a process, have a conversation, and the best we've been able to do is with these things. But ultimately, those things are simply tools in the larger goal of our organizations, which is to facilitate conversations. Now, the problem with this is that libraries, by and large, have set themselves up as artifact agencies. We set ourselves up with our processes looking at collection development and cataloging, and we focus so much on these things and these artifacts that we forget what's going on with the conversations. Why is it that preservation and archiving is in the same organization as reference? It doesn't make sense from a thing point of view. Right? The best you can do is we keep the things, we preserve the things, and when people ask questions about the things, we have people that answer the questions. It's a very unsatisfying sort of glue for an organization. What might be more interesting is we facilitate conversations. Those conversations can last millennia. And we need a memory of those conversations so that as we go through those conversations, as those conversations change parties, we have this memory. The best mechanisms we have for the memory are these things called books. Tablets, microfiche. And those need to be preserved because important conversations need to continue. And they need to be well-informed conversations. Right? That suddenly makes it interesting. Why is reference and archives in the same thing as collection development and public services and children's reading hour? Because what we're doing is we are an organization that facilitates conversations. It just so happens that we have found it to be very effective when we push conversations forward that we have a memory of the things that happen, that we transfer this information as best we can, and secondarily to having me go around and talk to you all individually, we'll do that with some sort of recording, whether it's in text, whether it's in pictures, whether it's in video. What this means, though, is that as we sort of push this, as people go online, and I would argue as people go into your organizations and agencies and they seek to learn, they're seeking conversations. And what this creates is a pressure for participation. As people need to be active constructors of their knowledge, they are looking for institutions, tools, facilities, functions, things that facilitate their active learning. Right? They want tools that allow and facilitate conversation and participation. Now, we can see this in an internet domain. Right? If we look at the internet for a moment and we say, all right, at the basic, what is the internet? The basic level of the internet is its infrastructure. And the internet infrastructure is really, really interesting in that it's really, really lightweight. The only thing that defines the internet are two protocols, TCP and IP, which is my second language, by the way. All TCP does is say, I'm going to take a big chunk of information. I don't care what that information is. It's ones and zeros. That's all I care about. I'm going to break it up into little packets, and I'm going to send it around to the right place. That's all it does. And so the internet, in very real way, is an agreement. I agree to send things to you. You agree to send things to me. We agree to send things around. And we're going to use TCP/IP. And it's participatory because if you don't like it, don't join. And if you don't like the kind of information they're going to, filter it out. And if you don't like the bandwidth, add more. It's all very much the idea of agreements. And agreements are conversations. Now, what's interesting, so the next level up, we talk about things like the applications we use. The applications are simply email, the web. These are sit on top of this very interesting infrastructure. And we'll talk about this in a second. The next layer is the information services, taking the information organizations have, using the applications to get them out to users. But if you sort of go back in time, we talked a little bit about TCP/IP. This idea of a participatory wide area network is not organic. In other words, it's not the only way to do it. If you look, if you remember way back in the days of Prodigy and CompuServe and AOL before the change, that was not a participatory network. It was kind of like you pay your money, you get our applications, you get our infrastructure, you don't like it, don't pay for it. Right? If you went to CompuServe and said, you know, I really, really like what you're doing here, but I need to filter this stuff out, they say, sorry. We don't do that for you. We don't do that for anyone. Right? When you look at applications, what people started looking around is, why should I be, if I'm not satisfied at the infrastructure level, why should I be satisfied with not being an active participant in the software layer? If I can't look at your source code, if I can't vet your product, if I can't take it, rip it apart, and test it, I don't trust it. I don't want it. If I don't like Internet Explorer, I want Firefox. I have that option. If I don't want Firefox, I have Safari on a Mac, or I have Opera. And if I don't find any of those I like, I can write my own. The open source movement says not only the network needs to be participatory, but the tools we put on top of it need to be participatory. We bring a community around this. And you say, well, Dave, there's plenty of non-participatory software out there. Yeah, but look at the influence. When Microsoft Vista comes out, when Adobe comes out with its next version of Photoshop, what does it do? It puts it in an extended beta trial. It puts it out for the people to test. That's different. That's new. Can you imagine 20 years ago someone coming out with a piece of software and going, here, it's not done, but tell me what you think. It wouldn't have happened. But now, it's the norm. We expect it. We expect to try that out. At the information services layer, Web 2.0, when I come to your information, I want the same abilities I have at my application choices and my infrastructure choices. I want to be able to tell you what I think. And not only that, I want to be able to shape the way that comes to me. And I want to be able to rate it. And I want to be able to construct it. And I want to be able to get it out the way I want. I want to be able to take your information and put it on a Google map. What this is going on here, Web 2.0, whatever the phrase you want. By the way, there is a Web 3.0. It's very exciting. What it means is I'm in control. Right? Time Magazine, you are the person of the year. You're in control. Right? You get to construct this information. Now, that gets very uncomfortable for the people who have the information. I remember when the web first came out talking to publishers about HTML. And they said, all right, how do I do kerning? How do I do border depth? How do I do color test? I said, oh, no. You say it's bold. They're like, bold? I said, yeah. What about font choice? No. You, whatever the user picks, they get. It drove them nuts. So, and they reacted. Cascading style sheets have made life so much easier from a technology standpoint. Right? But the idea here is that the user can construct this information, which you sit there and go, well, yeah, screen readers. We need to be able to do that for user choice. Now, at the user level, this turns into credibility. Libraries and librarians are seen as credible institutions. But increasingly, we're shifting, seeing a shift from an authority model to a reliability model of credibility. What that means is I don't trust no one to tell me something. I know that was a double negative, and it could well have been a triple, but we'll parse it later. The idea here is that I want to go from source to source to source and pick what's true or what's not true. I want to find out. I want to make myself the expert. That creates really interesting challenges, but actually fits perfectly into a reference mode of a library. That's what we do. We go and we find multiple sources of information. We look for concordance. We look for multiple, you know, perspectives. That's what we do. We actually match this better than most organizations do. What we're seeing now is we're seeing a very interesting trend. Now, I know you can't read this item. Thank you for, you know. Anyway, when you look at systems, when we went out and we looked at participatory systems, when we looked at how these things were playing out in libraries, the first thing you find is you find a lot of systems, right? Don't read them. Don't worry about it. Just look at the number. Because actually, if you go read them, they're probably not radically different than your homepage. Because they're things like the traditional reference services here, the virtual reference services here. They don't talk to each other, but that's fine. We have an institutional repository and we have a digital library. What's the difference? Well, the digital library is when we scan our own stuff. The institutional repository is when we get other people's stuff, but it's still digital information. We have external feeds. We have our databases. We have our bibliographic catalog. We have our recommenders and use systems. Well, we're already seeing strong efforts within the library community to begin to fold and integrate these in. Right? This is a result. That first column is a result of technological advance. What libraries have done for a long time is tried it and tried it and tried it. And rather than worrying about how to integrate them and put them together, we simply tried it. We were so busy, in a good way, seeking service, seeking to meet our audience's needs, that we sort of piled a lot of weight on our shoulders to try and support them. Now we're going back and we're saying, well, you know, what is the difference between an institutional repository and a digital collection? Nothing. Merge them. Why can't I search your books and your databases at the same time? You should. Federated searching. Right? Why can't we take circulation data and book reviews and put them in our catalog? You can. Recommender systems. Right? We're seeing this merge. Well, this creates a trajectory. There's an obvious next step. That we begin to merge all our metadata together to come up with the enhanced catalog. Ann Arbor Public Library, good example. Right? And we begin to take all our digital assets and merge those together into a community repository. And the next obvious step is to merge them all into one system. Where a user can walk up to the library, and I mean walk up physically to a terminal, come in virtually, and they can say, I'm looking for something. And when they don't find the something, they can add it. Yes. Take for a minute your catalog. Does your catalog, one, assume the user is stupid, or does it assume that you're stupid? Because those are your two choices. I'll give you a quick test. Test number one, user is stupid. User puts in query. Query returns no result. What do they see on the screen? Have you checked your spelling? Did you know we offer information instruction? Perhaps you could ask a librarian who's smarter and better than you and we won't make fun of you, right? That's assuming that the user's done something wrong. Now, the opposite of that is assuming that you're stupid, that the library's done something wrong. We're sorry we don't have this. Here's interlibrary loan. Here's how to search other sources. What about a third option? Don't see it? Add it. Now, you say, well, what is the user going to add? They're coming looking for something. Well, why don't they add a reference question? And why not have that reference question and the answer then become part of that catalog too? No, this is bibliographic data. Please. It's data. What we're talking about is having information. When you have a community, everyone reads the same book. We see this a lot in cities. We see this a lot in universities. Everyone reads the same book. All right, I come here and I look for the book. Why can't I also find out at the same query, same time, about the book clubs that are meeting? And why can't I see a blog about this? And why can't I actually get the full text of the book if it's available? Why can't I see articles that were written here? In other words, why do I, as a user, have to navigate from this is bibliographic data, this is full text data? Look at our databases. Good Lord, look at our databases. If we are really good libraries, if we do what is in the interest of our public, we buy lots of them. And then what do? We try and figure out how the hell do they all fit together. How many people have had the committee All right, we'll do it by vendor. No, we'll do it by subject. Okay, but this one's fan subjects. Okay, screw it, we'll do it alphabetically, right? And then the ultimate conclusion, no, we'll do them all, right? That makes it so much easier. That's great. Right? The idea of what's metadata, I was talking with an organization that said, we solved this problem, Dave. I said, great. They said, we create a federated search. I said, great. They said, we search 6 million items. I said, great. I said, what do they get? Well, what happens is you put in a result, and it gives you this great Boolean query at the top, and then it gives you 50,000 bibliographic records from the catalog. And then at the end, because we don't know how to merge those with full text, we give them the full text. I said, at the end? Right? The idea that people want to see themselves in this catalog. Let's take a quick gander at what I mean. I'm a trustee. I'm allowed to pick on my own public library. All right? I'm going to go look for Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone because that's just, you know, everyone else uses Britney Spears for searching. I use Harry Potter for online catalogs. We're a kindler, gentler profession. So here's the first thing, right? The first thing, I come to this and I'm going to go to the catalog, right? Because that's where I order sweaters. Okay. Tell me you haven't had people who said that. Oh, this is good. Now I can search the catalog or I can search the digital catalog. So I'm guessing this is for digital clocks now. Right? What this is, by the way, you already know what this is. This is, of course, the OPAC, and this is OverDrive. Right? This is our online sources because, God forbid, we actually be able to integrate them. All right, I'm going to go to the catalog. Boom. I'm going to enter my search query here, but it's okay. No matter how bad it is, I've got Aqua browser, so it's going to be graphical. That's going to make it cool. All right, I search, and the first thing I get with Harry Potter, of course, is the magic of Harry Potter. Okay. Second one is a Lego creator, right up there. Third one is Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Hey, at least we got a book. Right. Why is this? Well, let's face it. Some catalogs do a really brilliant sort technique by the last record I put in is the first record that comes out. Makes a lot of sense. But the other thing is just think, put on your cataloging hats for a moment. If you have a book about Harry Potter, or you have the Harry Potter book, and you have a book about J.K. Rowling, which one of that bibliographic data is actually going to say Harry Potter more? Right? Harry Potter, the book, has it in the title, and you sort of say, it tells the story of a wizard, blah, 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 blah. J.K. Rowling, the author of Harry Potter, and Harry Potter made her, right? So even if you use really good retrieval techniques and bibliographic data, the actual item's not going to pop up first. So we go to the second screen. Okay. And on the second screen, there it is. Third item on the second screen. Boom. I pull it up, and now I can see everything I ever wanted to know about Harry Potter, including where it is in my library. All right? We'll get to that in a second. Now let's do the thing that we all hate doing, which is the way most users, including myself, look for books in the library, which is start at Amazon, find the ISBN number, and go to my library. Why? Well, first of all, I'm going to go ahead and put in Harry Potter. And the first result, and by the way, they're not harmless here, because notice, the first result is a book that's not even out yet. That's good. Because it's pre-order. This is done by popularity. But if I scroll down on the same page, I'm going to find Sorcerer's Stone. There it is. I click on it. And up comes Harry Potter. Now, here's the big thing, right? Everyone brings up Amazon and asks why our catalog can't be more Amazon-like. By the way, I think that's aiming a little low. And I'll show you why in a second. But the answer is almost always we've got to make it simpler, easier, flashier, right? Isn't it always the catalog is too complex? Make it simpler. Make it less information. Don't deluge the user. Watch this. This is the entire bibliographic contents of that record, well, in two places, which is cool, in OCLC's WorldCat. When you ask WorldCat, that's the entire amount of information you get. All right? Yes, you can read that. I understand. This is what Onondaga County Public Library provides you in terms of bibliographic data because it shows you holdings. Here's what the National Library of Australia does. Here's what the Library of Congress does. Everyone ready? There's Amazon. That's the amount of information on a single page for Amazon.com. You go, oh, of course, Dave, they're busy trying to sell us stuff. Well, let's take a look at that. That first bar, way down there, it's sort of split. It's a high-tech, it's a feature. That's the branding information. That says you're at Amazon.com. That next level, that green bar, that's all the sales information, which is really bibliographic. It's ISBN number, it's author, it's publisher. The next thing is recommendations based on sales. People bought this, also bought this other thing. Then we get a lot of expert reviews. This is what Book Review said about it, New York Times said about it. These are tags and, this is the bibliographic content. Here are recommendations based on what people purchased. These are all open review processes. Pathfinders, discussion tools, and only at the bottom do you get more marketing information. Remember when we used to do pathfinders? The difference between these two systems is that the catalog, the OPAC, is an inventory system, and Amazon is a discovery tool. They're radically different things. An inventory system is when you go shopping for shoes and you say, that's great. I can do Khrushchev. That's great, but do you have it in a size 8? And the clerk leaves you, walks behind a desk, works on a screen that you never see, and comes back and says, yes, we do, because that system is not meant for human consumption. And what do? That's our number one interface to our users. It's an inventory system. Now, there's nothing wrong with an inventory system. We need inventory systems. But what they are is they're artifacts. What we're doing is we're providing a catalog, an organized inventory of things, and totally ignoring what Amazon thinks is its number one thing, which are conversations. All this information is people talking about an item. All right? Now, what I want to do is I want to just give you, out of this paper, we came up with a series of recommendations. In general, libraries must be active participants in this. Now, all right, Dave, we've heard this enough. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. We've heard the library 2.0. No. Here's the deal. Right now, your patrons and your librarians are using tools that you have no idea about. Right? Let's face it. When you have a frustrated, really innovative librarian and they look at the catalog and they just sort of do like this because they want to change it, what's the first thing they do? They go online and start a blog. Why? Because they can start a blog without permission with a single click that has no problems with IT infrastructure and security. And if they don't want to do that, they can go to Ning.com and start a whole social networking. And if they got a video that you go to their IT and they say, I got this cool streaming video from our children's hour, I want to put it online, and they hear, what's our bandwidth requirement? They go, forget it, I'm going to YouTube. What we've done is we're users of these services, not consciously. But the other thing we've done is we've used them without actually thinking about how to use them and without shaping them. A lot of people in the reference world are getting sort of discontented with some of the virtual reference products, and they're saying, we're going to use IM, instant messaging. The problem is you've never actually spent time reading the entire thing, the entire user policy. You're violating it when you use IM. Right? When you use IM, the first thing it says is personal use only. So you're using it for library reference, violation number one. The second thing is, we don't want to use you because you store our data. We'll use IM that stores your data. And not only is it not OCLC storing your data with question point, now it's Microsoft and Meebo and these people storing your data, and they're giving it away for free for a reason. They're data mining it like crazy on the back end. Right? So what we have is a situation that we need to be there. We're already doing it, and unless we're at the table helping to shape these technologies, they will shape us. Recommendation number two, we must be done at the core of the library. I'm going to say the heretical. A blog will bring not one more patron into your library, period, done. If you add a blog, if you add Flickr, if you add a photo upload, what you're doing is you're adding to the weight of the systems you don't have integrated yet. We need to start right in the middle at the catalog and say, that's what we need to change. We don't need to make a business case for a wiki. We have a business case for a better catalog. That's where we should start with these different technologies. Anything we do that doesn't start at the core is simply adding more stress. Now, Dave's against blogs. He has one. No, Dave loves blogs, and I think they're really good reasons to have them. I think they make great sense for doing marketing. They're wonderful tools for doing sequential updating. But what I'm telling you is, by throwing a blog or a wiki at your site and saying, we are now Library 2.0 compliant, you haven't really solved the problem. I think there's some brilliant stuff going on in Library 2.0. I think there's brilliant stuff going on in Library 2.0. But it's avoiding this sort of mutant 900-pound gorilla in the middle that's sort of looking at you going, Mark, right? That's where we need to change, right? People aren't going to go to your blog to find Harry Potter. And if they do, they're misinformed, Right? That's what we need to talk. I think you should host blogs for your community. That would be much more interesting to me to make it part of the community. Out of this, we came up with a series of specific recommendations. The first is that we need a broader, deeper conversation about this. But what we really wanted to do was talk about creating a test bed. Because here's the thing. I lived through the virtual reference days. I lived through the metadata wars. What we will inevitably do and what we see now is everyone's going to try it. And everyone's going to, some work, some fail, and we're going to have 1,000 seeds, 1,000 flowers, but they're all going to be growing in different pastures. And I don't know where that metaphor ends, but what it comes down to is that we're going to be spending a lot of money separately when we could spend less money together and get greater results. So I'm going to give you some examples. We've started some of the work of this test bed. What we're looking to do is create an expanding set of diverse case studies. Right? So we want to go out, we want to find really interesting ways we can apply these concepts of participatory network, libraries conversation, in lots of different domains, and then build the tools and infrastructure and knowledge to do that. We're looking for about 8 to 10 cases with cooperative agreements, and what I'm going to do is show you just the itty-bitty first step, which is we started working with the redesign of electronic reserve system at Syracuse University. So there's the standard, it's a digital thing. We've also started talking to the Philadelphia Free Library, or the Free Library of Philadelphia, which is doing a really interesting work in their physical structure, and they want to do really interesting service and programmatic structures to go with it. And then finally, just talk a little bit about gaming in libraries and how it applies. So let me start with the obvious, which is how we can do the techie, cool, nerd stuff. This is Syracuse University's online system. If you're a student and you want to get your reserves, what you do is you go ahead and you find reserves. There you go. And then what you do is you go and you tell it what instructor or department or course you're in. And then once you've done that, you get a listing of everything the library has, full textbooks, whatever, that go with that course. So it's just a module that goes on to the OPAC. The library came to us and said, can we do this better? Can we do this in a little bit more interesting way? I mean, it works fine, but what can we do? So we went through a couple of generations of this. And I'm going to show you the first generation. The first generation, we realized that, one, the library knows who you are. In essence, when you log in, it already knows what courses you're taking. Why do you have to select? Right? So can't we simply put it all together? And look at all this sort of 2.0 stuff. Let's come up with a 2.0 reserve system. All right? So what we've done is we now have my articles, because it automatically knows who I am and it puts it in. And we have my books, and we have my courses that I'm taking. We have feeds, RSS feeds, that kind of thing. My stuff, my friends, because it's social networking, it's cool. And then what you do is you pull up an article, and it gives you just sort of the general bibliographic data here. What they were pushing really hard, and I agree with them, is that you have access to a librarian right there. Right? So if you're in a course, you should have access to that subject librarian right available to that course. We have all the wonderful tags that are associated, so you get this wonderful cloud view about it. We have the librarything.com, where if someone else has reading this article, they comment it and rate it. We can see that. People can annotate it, put their own notes, and share them. And then we have a link to Amazon in case you want to actually get the item. Cool. All right? So we looked at this and we said, cool. This is, you know, it's cool. It's hep. It's got all the right buzzwords in technology, right? We're doing web APIs, so we're mashing up data. We've got tags and folksonomies. Those are cool. We've got people and virtual reference, that sort of library cool. We've got social networking, cool. We've done it. And we looked at it and we said, this isn't right. What we've done is we've done what everyone does in digital libraries, which is we throw more metadata at it. What we've done is we've taken some item and we've added more and more and more descriptive data that has nothing to do with the user on this site. The other thing we said is, all right, I'm in a class. Do I really care if it's a book or an article? Right? Do I care if I have, you know, it's a feed or it's this? Why am I having this data segmented by media type? Why am I having the artifacts dictate how I organize my information? This is a conversation. I mean, no more clearly is a course a conversation, right? You're having a discussion. When you get a syllabus, the syllabus is the introduction to the conversation. When it links to resources, what it's saying is, here are other points of the conversation to get you up to speed. And what we've done here is we said, oh no, that's an article. That's a book. Who cares? The professor didn't. I did not care when I put my syllabus together whether it was a book or an article. I just cared that it was important data. And now I'm making the user try and navigate this. So, yes, it's got all the earmarks of the cool new gadget stuff. In some ways, it's an advance of description, but it's still not a conversation, right? This is the idea of throwing a blog on top of the catalog. So we came up with the next iteration, and we love graph views, so I apologize ahead of time. Now what happens is when people log in, you have my conversations. There aren't a bunch of segments. These are just different views, my resources, my friends. These are different views, but this is the main one. And not only are we going to limit them to the courses they're taking, like ISD 53 or CAS, we're going to let them put their great American novel up here. We're going to let them put their latest thesis up here. We're going to let them put any conversation they want. And by having the conversation, they have a bunch of artifacts that may be part of it. So they have the syllabus, and the syllabus links to a lot of stuff. But they also know the connections, right? So this syllabus told me this article was good. It reminded me of this picture that I uploaded, my picture. When I went to the library, why can't I put my stuff up? If I have a picture or an article that meets this, why can't the library help me organize that data? And when I saw that picture, I really wanted to talk to the photographer, so I emailed them, and there's my email. Right? So suddenly we have a conversation going. Think of it this way. Imagine if you did a bibliography and you listed 15 different resources. Right? You came back to it a year later and I asked, why those 15? Would you know? Why those 15? What you really want is the connective tissue, as Stuart Sutton used to say, between those. I picked the 15 because this tells me this and this tells... You want an annotated bibliography. You want an in-depth bibliography. Well, what this does, that's what this is. Now, it's in a pretty icon graph view, but why not hit export and all of these become API cited things, and this text connects them and it becomes your lit review. And it becomes your materials at the same time. Now I'm reflecting my user's conversations, not simply my stuff that the user needs. Right? We can take this a step further. When you click on one of these items, now this stuff comes in. Now this stuff might be interesting, but now I have the context around what this thing is because I know where it fits in my life. And when I want to add a new node, no problem. Click, add a new node. Do you want to add something from your catalog? Do you want to add something from a Google, standing Google query? Do you want to add an RSS feed? Do you want to upload something? Do you want to make it public so other people can see it? And then in a library-like thing, do you want to see everyone else who has this item? And what was their connection between this item and that item? I mean, the really cool thing is imagine surfing your catalog, not based on a Dewey extension number, but surfing your catalog based on how people put the connections together. I'll do a really quick example I use everywhere. One of my favorite historians is by the name of James Burke, and he writes this sort of nonlinear view of history. And he said, the North winning the Civil War, I don't think that's too sore of a point in Texas, but the North winning the Civil War led to the modern computer revolution. I'm going to do this quick. The South should have won the Civil War. Once again, pause for political view. By traditional military view, they had more men. More men equals victory. The North, however, had industry. They could produce more cannons. What happened was cannons equalized the field. But the problem with cannons is you can't see a bad guy coming, pointing at him and pull the trigger because they use ballistics. They go in an arc. And in order to figure out the trajectory, you need to know the distance under the arc, which is calculus. And not too many Civil War vets knew a lot of calculus in the field. So what they used to do was they used to put mathematicians in a big room like this where they would calculate tables, they called them computers, where they would compute at this distance, fire at this angle. And as war, this lesson got learned, so as we moved into World War I and World War II, we realized that artillery and cannon fire are what wins war, so we produced more and more, and industrial techniques picked up, we could produce them faster and faster, so fast that we couldn't get enough people to develop the table, so we tried to do an automated way that became the first digital computers that were powered by vacuum tubes that were very, very easy to break, and bugs used to walk into them and burst the tubes, that's why we use the word bugs, and so we needed to replace them, so we found by wafering silicon together, we could come up with something called a transistor that did the same thing at low power that we could minimize. Now we've gotten to the point where you can use lasers to etch them on screens, and we call those CPUs, and that's why the North winning the Civil War led to the computer revolution. That is not a linear thought, right? But imagine you could surf that. If you went over from, the North on artillery discussion over to computation, computation led you to electronic computers, you can see the connections. The connections are not specious. But they're not linear. But you could have done that, or you could have done that. And if we can put all those threads together, imagine what our libraries would look like. Imagine every conversation in your library suddenly intertwining to every other conversation. That's what we're trying to do with Every Community Read the Book. We're trying to stimulate a bunch of parallel, simultaneous conversations. And so when people say libraries are book places, libraries are conversation places. Books help. They're a good starting point. They're a good transmittal. But I don't care. I want to know what you want to know. I want to care what you want to learn. And I want to build systems that facilitate that. This is just one example, but what it becomes is a migration path from a catalog view to a conversational view. You may not like my features. I don't care. But what I do want you to see is that one is about conversations and one's about things. And if you want to be in the thing business, that's fine. I want to be in the conversation and learning business. I mean, our sainted, you know, Melville Dewey, when he looked at the public library, he said it should be a co-equal education institution with our schools, not things, not repositories. And so if we're in the learning business, we're in the conversation business, where are our conversations? They're happening. I can go, every one of you has a story about a reference inquiry or a patron or a program you supported that made the community better. Every one of you has one. Where is it on your website? Where is it in your catalog? Did you learn from that for the next patron? That's the system we need to be putting forward, not, oh, we got a new book on that. Books are fine. They're useful. They read. They're entertainment. That's part of our mission. But they are simply there to facilitate our true mission, which is conversation. The Free Library of Philadelphia is building a new building. It's going to be really cool. It's going to be really cool. I talked to the people who were designing or who had to actually try to implement. They're like, it's going to be really cool. It's a new signature building, right? Because the architect said, hey, we got a great idea. Shingled glass that sort of does this. And you're like, okay. Technology doesn't exist. We'll work that out. Right? So they look at it as a 100-year update to their facilities. What they're trying to say is every 100 years we build a new building. You know, we extend it. Let's look at our world-class services that we can put into it. Now, Free Library of Philadelphia is no slouch in regard to this. They offer, ready? 20,000 programs a year. Children's reading groups, lecture series, discussions, book fairs, 20,000. They're having discussions. They're having conversations. But part of what we're talking with is how do we integrate those together? And part of what they're asking is how do we take some of these concepts that you played online and bring them into a physical space? Because one of the things that we look at with participatory is not we just want participation online. In many ways, we're trying to have our online world catch up with what's happening in our physical libraries. But our physical libraries could use some of this idea too. So we looked at it and we said, all right, how do we... Dave, you're saying our job is to facilitate a conversation. The role of the librarian is to facilitate conversations. They may do that through information organization. They may do that through reference. They may do it through lots of different reasons, but your goal is to facilitate conversation. What does that mean? Well, at the basic, what that means is you need to provide access to the conversation. Right? Access. We have computers, so if they're online conversations, you can get at computing. We have rooms, so that if you're having a town group and they don't know where to come, we can host community groups in our physical spaces. We have access. If you have a conversation and it's vitally important that you have this medieval text, we can get you access to that medieval text. Access. This is what we do a lot. We have knowledge, which is it's not enough to have access to a conversation. You must be knowledgeable. When I went to Italy, I learned very quickly that you're not knowledgeable in Italian. You can't be part of a conversation. Well, my wife's Italian, and I've learned you can get the most of it. But the idea of knowledge, right? So we do training. We do instruction. I'm not asking people to radically go back and burn your buildings and start from scratch. What I'm doing is asking you to realize the stuff you're already doing and capitalize upon it. Why do we provide instruction? Why do we provide career services? Why do we provide searching technology? So that people can be better able to engage in conversations. Not so people can be better at using the libraries. We gave that up a long time ago. Not so people can be better at searching Google. We do it so that people can be better informed with conversations. In an academic library, they can join the intellectual discourse of scientific inquiry. In public libraries, they can join the working world of economic development. Whatever it is, The environment, we provide a safe environment for them to do. Public libraries, we provide a safe environment for children to participate in. But we also, with things like intellectual property and Patriot Act and our adherence to privacy, we provide people a safe place to have a conversation because they know they're not being tracked. So we provide facilitating conversations and motivation. Now, I would say it's very difficult for libraries to provide motivation, but at the very least, we got to prevent people from killing motivation. Right? So we started looking at how does this play out in the physical world. Once again, provide meeting rooms, provide sufficient bandwidth, collection of unique resources and knowledge, provide training, mentoring, and access to experts, pathfinders and synthesis, with environment, free and open access that matches community norms. With motivation, we can at least recognize the effort. Right now, librarians have a very simple view of identity. There are two people that are in our libraries at any time. There are librarians, and there are not librarians. Why? Librarians have the power. They can change the systems. They can add to the systems. They can manipulate the systems. They can set policy. Everyone else, from our patrons to our custodial staff to sometimes our IT people, their job is to not do that. That's a pretty simple view. If you are trying to be a community resource, do you want to be a resource to the community or do you want to be part of the community? Because if you're part of the community, what you're doing is acknowledging there is value. So how can we do that? Well, how about things like, here's a really interesting group that wanted to develop things on manga and anime. Let's give them a shelf and let them organize the shelf. In a physical space, we have an anti-violence group that's brilliant. They have a lot of records. They don't know what to do with them. Let's store them and make them publicly available. And what, guess what? Oh, Dave, we have to catalog them. No. Don't even create one catalog record that says the collection. Point to it. It's their responsibility to how it's organized, how it's maintained, how it's trafficked. Right? The idea of access. You know, the idea that we provide training to these systems, but we provide a hybrid environment. You have people come into a meeting room. You give them the meeting room. Do you let them stream it online as well so that people who can't physically make it can still be part of the conversation? What we're trying to do, I used to be a big proponent of the virtual branch, that the website was somehow a separate run organization like a branch library. I've given that up. What I want to do is I want to make the lines between what happens on the web and what happens in the physical library as blurry and as transparent as possible. When you have a lecture series and you're streaming it up to another room because it's full, you have the ability to stream it out to the world to participate. Why not? And here's another one that they brought up in Philadelphia. If there's an excellent concert going on down the street, why not stream it into the library? Why not become this connective tissue, right? Libraries are in this unique, amazing position like no other organization can be. We can provide the connective tissue of our communities. We're not the center of it. We're not the whole thing. But we have the unique ability to look beyond school, department, service, organization, and put them together and do it in a conversational way as opposed to an artifact way. The way you connect someone to a social service is not by handing them a pamphlet about social services. You help them pick up the phone. Right? We can be the people who organize the 211 services. Another sort of light example, Scott Nicholson is working on a gaming in libraries. He said, people are looking at gaming. Oh, that's a social experience. We'll bring people in the libraries because they'll come and game. And what we do is we set them in front of computer screens and first-person shooters where for 2 hours they stare at a screen and then they get up and they go home. And they're going to do that right until their parents buy them a better computer in their room. That is not a social experience. What about board games? Trivial Pursuit is a more social thing than Megadeth 3000 with the big gun. Right? But we need to think about this. I think a lot of people, gaming in libraries is immensely cool. And look at some of the statistics. $13.5 billion industry. We're doing it. Scott's going out and surveying public libraries, and he's finding it all over the place. He's finding, my library doesn't do gaming. Do you have children's access computers? Yes. Do you have Reader Rabbit on there? Yes. You do gaming. Right? You're doing it already. You're collecting it. Why not take advantage of it as a social experience? Right? These are just some, what I'm trying to provide are some views that if we look underneath the 2.0s, If we peel back the layers of the technologies and functions, there's something fundamentally interesting going on, and we are putting artifacts in the way of getting to it. What is interesting beyond this, what will be in Web 3.0, 4.0, 5.0, and 6.0, what will be there is the idea that I am an empowered user. I want to be part of your organization. I want to help shape your organization. I want to control part of this world and be partners, not simply receivers. Now, will that be a wiki and a blog and this? Today, probably. Cool. Will it be wiki and blog tomorrow? Probably not. We're moving too fast. But what I want is I want the library to develop the replacements for wikis and blogs. I want libraries, if you don't do it on purpose, you're going to partner with people who do it. People say, oh, Google won the search war. Google didn't win the search war. The search war never ends, folks. Right? The Alexandria Library in ancient Egypt won the search war a long time ago. That doesn't mean they get to keep the trophy. Right? If you've done a Google search, you realize that the top 10 results, Google is beginning to drown in its own history. Do something on the new, and you will find the new whatever from 1982 and from 1997. That's where can libraries with controls and such come in, right? Let's work with Google to figure this. We're already doing it with our book systems. Let's keep going with that. So my last statement, and then you can come up and yell at me. My last statement is that, one, we need to change. We need a fundamental change in libraries from an artifact view to a conversation view. And you're going to tell me you've already done that by and large, and I say bravo, but what I want you to do is go back and look at everything you do and suddenly say, is that artifact-based or is that conversation-based? Right? Look at your reserve systems. Look at your catalogs. Look at your reader's advisory. Look at your pointers. You probably have websites that say, here are good resources on whatever. Right? So you have good resources on taxes because it's the tax season. Did you point them to the IRS? Great. Did that help them? Probably not. Right? Why not? Right? It's like handing, I don't know how to do my tax form. Here's the tax form. I don't know how to fill out the tax form. Here's the tax form. That's an artifact view. The solution to their problem is not a thing. The solution to the problem is you. To help them, to walk them, to connect them, to say, we're going to have a mentoring session. We're going to have a program. We're bringing accountants in next week to walk you through this. That's conversation. And if we don't change, and if we continue to say our job is simply to build these wonderful collections of artifacts, provide them out to what they may be, what we will become is a warehouse and a museum. Now, I love some museums, but even museums would say we don't want to be that. Right? They have curation. They have programs that connect these things together. Ultimately, I am asking you, as we are obligated, to have a conversation, to participate, to create. Because ultimately, this is the opportunity that we sit upon. Ultimately, if we do not accept the challenge that we are in the learning and conversation business, if we do not reach out to and shape these technologies, but merely continue to adopt and adapt, we will be left behind. There's the fear and loathing. But imagine what the world would be like if we were at that table. This is the true value. Imagine what the world would be like if a credible, informed, genial group sat and said, we can make a better information world for you. We can be part of enabling you, the user, to be well. To make you, the user, the best that you can be. We will facilitate and help you in all of those endeavors. That's the world we need. That's the world that I ask you to be part of. I thank you very much for your time. And we have questions, if you have them.
Now, you have a really great website for your library. How do you get kids to go to it?
Do the kids get to build it? I mean, this is what we're finding with participatory, which is, first of all, define what a really great website is. Okay, right? What we found, we looked at a lot of websites, and we've stolen and modified an example that Barbara Quint did, which is our websites look very much like the coral reefs that we forgot to put the fish on. Right, they're great about the structure, they're great about some resources, they're great about finding the catalog, but they don't have a lot of life to them about new programs, new things going on. So one's new. But the important thing is, why do people go library thing and Amazon.com both have a tagging feature. You can go in and you can pretty much assign, let's just call them, they're uncontrolled keywords to resources. Amazon, no one uses them. Library thing, everyone uses them. Why? Well, their analysis was when you go to Amazon.com and they ask you to tag something, what you're doing is you're asking the user to come into your store and organize your shelves. With library thing, it's your collection, so you're being asked to organize your collections. One of the things we need to think about is instead of the library being a collection of collections, can the library be a collection of users' libraries where they have their materials, your materials, all commingled virtually and sometimes physically? So part of it is giving them a voice, and part of it is recognizing their voice once they get there. What we found in school libraries, you find some school library websites are massively used, and you ask why. They said, well, the webmaster is a student. Yeah, we give them supervision, we give them recognition, right? So you want kids there, what can the kids build? Not what can the kids find, what can the kids build, right? Imagine if you provided a playground where you said, kids, here's a terabyte of storage. As long as it's not illegal, and we'll check it out every so often, we do have policies here, we have community norms, go nuts. We'll support it. Why can't your library, for example, have a publishing house? When a kid comes in, Philadelphia Free is a great idea. What they're going to do is they're going to provide performance spaces, physical performance spaces for musicians. Musicians are going to be able to go into soundproof rooms and record music. Great. What happens with the song when they're done? Well, why can't they then take it, provide it on their servers, and send it out as a podcast to anyone who wants it if the user wants to distribute it? They can become the distribution mechanism. That's the ownership side of this. So when a user comes to your great website, do they see you or do they see them? I think that's the big difference between use and participation.
You mentioned Melville Dewey a little bit ago, and talking about his wanting to have libraries and schools co-equal rather than one being repository and the other being whatever it was. And would you say that we're coming full circle again, where it's time for us to, we're coming right back around where Dewey was and where we saw the relationship between the two.
I think,
and I'll hang up and take my answer.
I think that everything old is new again. This is part of what I hope I put forth, and sometimes I do it a little too stridently, is that a lot of what we know is right, we just simply need to do. So the idea, the public library began as a bunch of rich people who ran out of room and said, let's put them all together. Right? The idea of a library of people's libraries is actually something from our history. The idea that we learn through conversation could really easily be traced directly back to people like Socrates and Plato. And the idea that we have this dialectic, right? In many ways, what we're looking to do on the online world is to catch up with what we know we're doing in the physical world, right? In the physical libraries, we're putting in the coffee bars and we're making them more social spaces. By the way, I love coffee bars, but I think it'll make people who come to your library happier to have one, and you should do it, but it probably won't bring new people in because, like, public library is Starbucks. Public library is Starbucks, right? I mean, that's not the choice they're making. They want to be more comfortable within your space. By the way, no food in my library. Someone in Philly pointed out a great idea. That's great, except we circulate the book and we're, what, expecting them not to eat when they get home in front of the book? I'm sorry, I'm just blathering now. But yes, It is. I think it is time for, you know, we're a rather immodest crew at Syracuse, and I can't believe I'm about to say this in a recorded session, but we are really a proponent of a Dewey-level shift in librarianship. The idea of really taking a look and shifting from artifact view to a conversation view is a substantial change. But it is, as you say, in some ways a righting of a ship. It's a mission that we know about. It's in our past. But we need to sort of re-engage that mission and see how it works in today's environment.
Have you all been looking at any possible issues between participatory librarianship and open access and privacy issues? I don't want my conversations to be known out.
The answer to that, we've been thinking about them. And the idea is, this is where I come back to the idea of identity management. For me, the solution to DOPA is not to filter so you can't get it. It's to know who's really doing this. Now, let me be real clear. Identity management does not, what it means is creating a usable identity that has some level of authority or function around it. I have probably 50 identities in my life. right? Amazon knows me as this. We were talking before about TiVo. We're TiVo fans, right? And so TiVo must be really confused with my, you know, 4-year-old and a 7-year-old and my wife and me. It's like, I don't know, he's watching Barney and Battlestar Galactica. Just, while cooking, I guess. On Second Life, I have an identity. The ability to keep identity information does not necessarily mean that I give up what we want to get out of privacy, which is to link that identity to some sort of national ID system, right? So I can be, you know, Betty Jo 32 in one world and earn a level of participation or broadcast a level of discussion without knowing that that's David Lankus. And the question is, what conversation does our community, because I want to be really clear here, your community feel is necessary? Because this is the other thing. When I bring up all these wonderful tags and all this and you go participation, I'm a library in Denton, Texas. Why do I want people from Japan coming in and playing with my catalog? You don't. You want to be the Denton, Texas community. So what does Denton, Texas say about identity? What are they willing to trade? Amazon, people are willing to trade a lot of information for functionality. Now, back to why libraries should be part of this system. We've made a choice for our users. The choice, by and large, for our users is we won't keep it because you won't get yourself in trouble. That's a very paternalistic view. It says you won't get in trouble here because you can't get in trouble. What if we did allow people some level of participation? I don't know the answer, but I'd rather libraries be helping to develop that answer than letting Google do it or the Justice Department do it or the Internet service providers do it. That's what I mean when I say participate and be at the table. Privacy for me is front and center. Intellectual property is front and center. These are front and center discussions that if we're not part of them, other people will have them without us and ultimately will provide the tools that we then are forced to acquire. When we acquire IM, we violate our own ethics of privacy to do reference. Is that acceptable? Right? No, we need to be working with the IM people to make sure that it adheres to ours. So.
Finding on our campus.
Oh, hi.
There's still this going on with Blackboard.
Yes, there is.
There's a real disconnect. It's not the code community. Have you been able to pull this together very well?
The reserve system we talked about was specifically thinking towards Blackboard, WebCT world, which was there's a great possibility to integrate better with these tools with the library because now students aren't physically limited where they go, they're just conceptually limited where they go. And so part of our looking at the reserve system was how can we then bring it right into Blackboard, bring it right into these systems. I have been accused, and I will admit that I am hormonally open source. In other words, when I look at sort of this distribution curve, I think at the end when you're in the mature sector and when you're in the laggard sector, you should buy it. But I think when you're in the innovative sector, you should build it. And so looking at how we can use open source to integrate in open standards, even more than open source software, to integrate right into Blackboard is important. But we need to have something interesting to add when we get there. Right? That was the problem with the reserve system, is they looked at it and they said, you know, the professors are scanning these papers and putting it directly into Blackboard, violating lots of copyright. Fair use, copyright, anyway. But the idea was, how do we integrate in? We had a really interesting conversation with New York State Department of Education. They talked to the people who certify academic programs in New York State, and they said, we have schools that want to offer graduate programs, and we have this little thing that says you have to have a good academic library. And they said, we really are having a hard time defining what that is, because many schools will go in and say, we have the course, we take the syllabus, we scan all the materials in the syllabus, we create a course pack, we deliver that online. Why the hell do they need a library? And thank God for New York State, and I don't get to say that too often, they said that's not good enough. There's got to be durability. If you raise questions, which is part of a conversation, you must provide a resource that they can explore that topic more fully. And so we were really trying to take some of these concepts of conversation and being able to branch those conversations beyond the courses. And it's difficult. It's tough. But I think Blackboard is where we need to be. And once again, knocking on Blackboard's door so that we can have those modules in there.
Okay, let's do one more question and then we'll have to wrap up.
In the nature of conversations and Italian being multilingual, given that libraries are by nature multilingual if we're going to survive,
yep.
Have you started to have conversations about how we can be multilingual across the artifact and the participatory generations, which is one of the biggest issues I think right now is in academic libraries from one perspective and the public libraries from another?
We haven't taken that on directly. I will tell you that in their processing, Free Library of Philadelphia has a language lab built right in with free access to Rosetta and those types. So they're even seeing this language issue. But honestly, we haven't. It's not that we discount it. It's just, as you can see, we're trying to be pretty expansive in the areas we look for. And so if that's an area to be looked in, we'd love to look for partners to help us look at it.
Okay, well, that's all we have time for, but there's more conversation throughout the day and tomorrow. We really appreciate David being here and giving some ideas and